You already sense that the internet has changed us and is likely to keep on changing us. But you don't yet know what those changes are. It's hard to see the future and almost as hard to know what's lasting about the present. That's why we read writers like Michael Lewis. He's followed the fast turns in financial markets and technology for more than a decade in books like Liar's Poker. His newest work, Next, The Future Just Happened, is about the internet and about identity there, where Michael Lewis says, especially the roles of young and old are very different from what we're used to.
We live simultaneously at a time that is more future-obsessed than any time in history. But that by future obsession, we tend to mean what's happening tomorrow rather than what's happening 20 years from now. That's the bias of the technology industry. So when they talk and think about the future, they're talking about really the immediate future, and they're doing that because there are great financial consequences to the immediate future.
Which brings us to my favorite story in your book, which is that of Jonathan Lebed, a boy, a teenager, who winds up battling the Securities and Exchange Commission and, in some sense, winning. Tell me Jonathan's story.
Jonathan's a 14-year-old boy living in Cedar Grove, New Jersey, who went on the internet and discovered an aptitude for an interest in trading stocks. He would buy stock in a small company in the morning before he went to school, and then he would plaster the internet with messages telling other people that they should buy the same stock. Then he would disappear to school, leaving a sell order in the marketplace in case the stock went up, which it invariably did. His messages that he posted on the internet would have a great effect on these little stocks. And inside of 6 months, he had turned a few thousand dollars into $800,000. He becomes the Warren Buffett of Cedar Grove, New Jersey.
I love the detail in your story that when he first started writing, he wrote these kind of sober and serious analyses in language that might be used customarily on Wall Street. And that didn't work well enough. So that's when he started writing in all caps and using a lot of exclamation points, because that's what got people to buy.
The people who were buying into the stock based on his recommendations on the internet were acting not because they thought that this was actually some rational analysis that was worth paying attention to, but that he was creating energy around the stock. They were essentially playing the same game that he was. They were trying to just catch the ride up in a stock that other people were going to get excited about. And this is why the SEC had such trouble finding a victim of Jonathan Lebed. They couldn't find anybody who said, look, I was deceived by these internet postings. More likely, they just wanted to get in on the ground floor of something that he was creating.
You quote Stanford economist Paul Romer, who says or believes that the internet is just an example of ever faster technical progress, and the young understand it and adapt. And maybe we're moving to a world in which your peak earning years are going to be those before you turn 30.
This is an idea that I first became exposed to when I worked on Wall Street. I went to Wall Street in 1985, about when the computer hit Wall Street. And finance was becoming a site of great innovation. And so as a result, me, a 24-year-old who knows nothing about finance, 6 months after I've arrived on Wall Street, know things about what's going on in the business that my bosses don't understand, because I'm in on the ground floor of fast change, and I'm able to adapt in a way they're not. Lots of different spheres of economic life are being subject to rapid innovation. And when they are, young people enjoy an advantage.
You spent time with all these, kids, really, who are stock traders, legal advisors. How did it feel for you, a guy who's, 40?
Mm-hmm.
To be dealing with these teenagers, following them around with a notebook, writing down what they say?
It was a new experience for me as a reporter to be hanging around with people who were actually younger than I was. The people who I tend to write about tend to be important old men. And the hard part for me was having to remember what it was like to be 14 or 15 years old, how kind of pliable their identities were. I mean, this was the great appeal to a 15-year-old boy of the internet is that he can be what he wants to be. Among other things, the internet liberates people who do not like the way the world perceives them in the flesh. And that's a very powerful force. I mean, the premise of this book is that you've got to stop thinking of this technology as an engine for corporate profits And think about it as just as a subtle mechanism for altering people's relationships to each other.
It is the democratization of information.
It's the very messy democratization of information because, of course, a lot of the information on the internet is bad. There's still a lot of information that's not on the internet. But if you are a person in this world who depends for his prestige or his livelihood on having superior access to information, your life is going to be changed by this technology. And there are a lot of people who fit that description.
Is that all of us who are 40 and more than 40, more than 50?
I think you could say anybody who's grown up in the workforce has got to deal with it on some level. But I don't think it's a good time in history to be over 40 years old. It's a rather bleak time because there is this sense having done things counts for much less. The natural edge you might have had as an older person in the workforce, you've lost to some extent. And that's an unpleasant sensation.
There's a quality in this book of your looking at what's happened. How do you see yourself fitting into this as you're writing this book? What's your moral stance in this? Whose side are you on?
I feel very ambiguous about progress. Technical progress, everybody now understands, is the key to prosperity. But my own feeling is that prosperity comes with a price that perhaps we don't acknowledge. And there's something unnatural about the devaluation of the past that's implicit in the exaltation of the future.
Michael Lewis is author of Next, The Future Just Happened.